This past week, the New York Times published a special editor's note. It addressed the paper's reporting on Iraq's alleged possession of weapons of mass destruction and Saddam Hussein's possible links to terrorism. After reviewing hundreds of articles written before and after the invasion of Iraq, the Times editor said, "We have found a number of instances of coverage that was not as rigorous as it should have been." In today's edition, New York Times public editor Dan Okrent weighs in with his own conclusions on the paper's reporting on Iraq, WMDs, and terrorism. In his column, Okrent says of the editor's note, "I think they got it right, mostly." Dan Okrent joins us from our New York bureau. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Leah. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. So tell us, what is it that the editors of the New York Times got right in their note last week?
Well, I think they recognized that a lot of the reporting that was done in the weeks before and after the invasion was credulous. I guess that's the best word for it. That too often the reporters and editors took the word of government officials, various other anonymous sources, repeated that in the paper without proper qualification and further checking. Now, usually they would say down deep in the article, you know, there are other people who say otherwise or this cannot be proven. But nonetheless, the statement itself gets accepted as fact and it gets into the headlines and it creates an impression.
So why the word mostly? What's one area where you differ with the editor's assessment of the WMD reporting?
Well, it really had more to do with my view of what the causes were, which the editor's note didn't really go into. I think that a number of things were in play there. One was just the hunger for scoops. You know, there's a time when war is going on, editors grow epaulets on their shoulders. It just gets too damn exciting for them, I think. Secondly, there's the race to be on the front page, which leads writers to write a little bit more aggressively, put in the sound of trumpets, make it a little more thrilling, perhaps. Third, and I think that this is probably the most important point, reliance on anonymous sources that cannot be held responsible after the fact. And one thing that I think is very important in journalism, I would love to see this happen, I don't think it ever will happen, where every conversation between a reporter and an anonymous source begins, "I will protect your name on the condition that what you tell me is true. And if I find out if it's not true, your name will no longer be protected." Now, will that lead the source to perhaps not go as far as he might otherwise, or perhaps not talk at all? Well, if so, it's a protection against lying.
There's been criticism focused on the work of several Times reporters covering Iraq and WMDs, but in your column you say the failure was not individual but institutional, and you emphasize the role of the paper's editors. So what should editors at any news organization, what should they do to ensure the best possible reporting on these murky and very, very difficult subjects like Iraq and WMD?
You know, when it's a matter of war, a matter of human life on that scale, I think you need an extra standard of care and not a lesser standard. The lesser standard is racing to get into print to beat your competition. The extra standard of care is to look at everything that you're saying that you are not absolutely sure of and holding up against the strongest possible tests, the tests of other reporters on your staff, editors, give people the chance to challenge it. Is it really something that we can stand behind? And also to be very careful not to simply repeat what you've been told, no matter how you qualify it. You know, there's a school of press critics who say that really the newspapers ought to call themselves officials say, because they are simply repeating what they're told without further investigation, or sufficient further investigation, I should say.
Your column, a lot of it focuses on issues that apply to all newsrooms, and I don't exclude the newsroom of National Public Radio in this. And you are concerned that scoops aren't re-examined, I mean, once they're published, or they sort of maybe get put back on A10 in a newspaper. So how can an editor actually create an environment in a newsroom where reporters are encouraged to go back and revisit the stuff that they've done?
Well, I think no story that isn't fully resolved should ever die. That if an assertion is made, if one begins to walk down a particular investigative path and reports on it in the paper, you go back to it and back to it and back to it again and again and again. And that's something really that editors must be held responsible for doing. They're the ones who make the assignments, they're the ones who provide the space in the paper, and they're the ones who are really responsible for the paper saying what it does.
Are you concerned that maybe some of the recommendations you're making for the Times could lead to almost a kind of paralyzing self-obsession?
That'd be bad. I think the very fact of my job of having somebody who's in the building but not of the building and looking at the paper and examining it, or the same you have one at NPR as well, mm-hmm. can be something that would intimidate people. It shouldn't be. I think that there's pretty wide agreement on journalistic ethics and journalistic standards. They're not always held up because you're in a race with somebody else and you want to get the big story. If you are pulled back a little bit to not be first but to be right, I don't think that's such a tragedy.
Dan Okrent is the public editor of the New York Times. He joined us from our New York bureau. Dan, thanks a lot.
Thank you.